Sahih Bukhari, A Hadith Reading by Nolan Alfred. Volume 1, Book 3, Part 2, Knowledge. Chapter 101, narrated by Abdullah bin Amr bin Alaz. I heard Allah's apostle saying, Allah does not take away the knowledge by taking it away from the hearts of people, but takes it away by the death of the religious learned men, till when none of the religious learned men remain. People will take as their leaders ignorant persons, who, when consulted, will give their verdict without knowledge. So they will go astray, and will lead the people astray. Chapter 102, narrated by Abu Sayyid al-Khudri. Some women requested the Prophet to fix a day for them, as the men were taking all his time. On that he promised for them one day for religious lessons and commandments. Once, during such a lesson, the Prophet said, A woman whose three children die will be shielded by them from the hellfire. On that, a woman asked, If only two die? He replied, Even two will shield her from the hellfire. Chapter 103, narrated by Abu Sayyid al-Khudri. Similar to chapter 102, the sub-narrators are different on that. Abu Huraira qualified the three children referred to in the previous hadith as not having reached the age of committing sins, also known as the age of puberty in Islam. Chapter 104, narrated by Ibn Abu Mulaika. Whenever Aisha, the wife of the Prophet, heard anything which she did not understand, she used to ask again till she understood it completely. Aisha said, Once the Prophet said, Whoever will be called to account about his deeds on the day of resurrection will surely be punished. I said, Doesn't Allah say he surely will receive an easy reckoning? The Prophet replied, This means only the presentation of the accounts, but whoever will be argued about his account will certainly be ruined. Chapter 105, narrated by Sayyid. Abu Shure said, When Amr bin Sayyid was sending the troops to Mecca to fight Abdullah bin Az-Zubair, I said to him, O chief, allow me to tell you what the Prophet said on the day following the conquests of Mecca. My ears heard and my heart comprehended, and I saw him with my own eyes when he said it. He glorified and praised Allah, and then said, Allah, and not the people, has made Mecca a sanctuary. So anybody who has the belief in Allah and the last day, i.e. a Muslim, should neither shed blood in it nor cut down its trees. If anyone argues that fighting is allowed in Mecca, as Allah's apostle did fight in Mecca, tell him that Allah gave permission to his apostle, but he did not give it to you. The Prophet added, Allah allowed me only for a few hours on that day of the conquest, and today, its sanctity is the same as it was before. So it is incumbent upon those who are present to convey this information to those who are absent. Abu Shure was asked, What did Amr reply? He said, Amr said, O Abu Shure, I know better than you in this respect. Mecca does not give protection to one who disobeys Allah or runs after committing murder or theft. Chapter 106, narrated by Abu Bakr. The Prophet said, No doubt your blood property. Author's note, the sub-narrator, Muhammad, thought that Abu Bakr had also mentioned, and your honor, they are sacred to one another, as is the sanctity of this day of yours and this month of yours. It is incumbent on those who are present to inform those who are absent. Author's note, Muhammad, the sub-narrator, used to say, Allah's apostle told the truth. Abu Bakr said, the Prophet repeated twice, no doubt, haven't I conveyed Allah's message to you? Chapter 107, narrated by Ali. The Prophet said, Do not tell a lie against me, for whoever tells a lie against me intentionally, then he will surely enter the hellfire. Chapter 108, narrated by Abdullah bin Az-Zubair. I said to my father, I do not hear from you any narration of Allah's apostle as I hear his narration from so-and-so. Az-Zubair replied, I was always with the Prophet, and I heard him saying, Whoever tells a lie against me intentionally, then surely let him occupy his seat in hellfire. Chapter 108, narrated by Anas. The fact which stops me from narrating a great number of hadiths to you is that the Prophet said, "Whoever tells a lie against me intentionally, then surely let him occupy his seat in hellfire." Chapter 109, narrated by Salama. I heard the Prophet saying, "Whoever intentionally ascribes to me what I have not said, then surely let him occupy his seat in hellfire." Chapter 110, narrated by Abu Huraira. The Prophet said, "Name yourselves with my name, but do not name yourselves with my kunya name, i.e. Abu il-Qasim. And whoever sees me in a dream, then surely he has seen me, for Satan cannot impersonate me. And whoever tells a lie against me intentionally, then surely let him occupy his seat in hellfire." Chapter 112, narrated by Ash Shabi. Abu Juhayfa said, "I asked Ali, have you got any book which has been revealed to the Prophet apart from the Quran?" Ali replied, "No, except Allah's book, or the power of understanding which has been bestowed by Allah upon a Muslim, or what is written in this sheet of paper with me." Abu Juhayfa said, "I asked, what is written in this sheet of paper?" Ali replied, "It deals with the diya." Author's note, this is essentially blood money paid by the killer to the relatives of the victim. The ransom for the releasing of the captives from the hands of the enemies, and the law that no Muslim should be killed in qisas. Author's note, qisas means equality in punishment for the killing of a disbeliever. Chapter 113, narrated by Abu Huraira. In the year of the conquest of Mecca, the tribe of Khuzas killed a man from the tribe of Bani Laith in revenge for a killed person belonging to them. They informed the Prophet about it. So he rode his ralia, she-camel, and addressed the people saying, "Allah held back the killing from Mecca." Author's note, the sub-narrator is in doubt whether the Prophet said elephant or killing, as the Arabic words standing for these words have great similarity in shape. But he, Allah, let his apostle and the believers overpower the infidels of Mecca. Beware, Mecca is a sanctuary, verily. Fighting in Mecca was not permitted for anyone before me, nor will it be permitted for anyone after me. War in it was made legal for me for a few hours or so on that day. No doubt it is at this moment a sanctuary. It is not allowed to uproot its thorny shrubs, or to uproot its trees, or to pick up its lukat, except by a person who will look for its owner. And if somebody is killed, then his closest relative has the right to choose one of the two, blood money, or retaliation, having the killer killed. In the meantime, a man from Yemen came and said, "O Allah's apostle, get that written for me." The Prophet ordered his companions to write that for him. Then a man from Quraysh said, Except Al-Ikir, a type of grass. Author's note, that's a type of grass that has a good smell. O Allah's apostle, as we use it in our houses and our graves. The Prophet said, "Except Al-Ikir." Al-Ikir is allowed to be plucked. Chapter 114, narrated by Abu Huraira. There is none among the companions of the Prophet who has narrated more hadiths than I, except Abdullah bin Amr, who used to write them, and I never did the same. Chapter 115, narrated by Ubaidullah bin Abdullah. Ibn Abbas said, when the ailment of the Prophet became worse, he said, "Bring me writing paper, and I will write for you a statement, after which you will not go astray." But Umar said, "The Prophet is seriously ill, and we have got Allah's book with us, and that is sufficient for us." But the companions of the Prophet differed about this, and then there was a hue and cry. On that, the Prophet said to them, "Go away, and leave me alone. It is not right that you should quarrel in front of me." Ibn Abbas came out saying, "It was most unfortunate that Allah's apostle was prevented from writing that statement for them because of their disagreement and noise." Author's note, it's apparent from this hadith that Ibn Abbas had witnessed the event and came out saying this statement. That's not necessarily the truth, for Ibn Abbas used to say this statement on narrating the hadith, and he had not witnessed this event personally. Chapter 116, narrated by Salama. One night, Allah's apostle got up and said, "Subhanallah, how many afflictions have been descended tonight, at how many treasures have been disclosed. Go and wake up the sleeping lady occupants of these dwellings. Go and wake the sleeping occupants of these dwellings up for prayers. A well-dressed soul in this world may be naked in the hereafter. Chapter 117, narrated by Abdullah bin Umar. Once the Prophet led us in the Isha prayer during the last days of his life, and after finishing the prayer, he said, "Do you realize the importance of this night? Nobody present on the surface of the earth tonight will be living after the completion of 100 years from this night." Chapter 118, narrated by Ibn Abbas. I stayed overnight in the house of my aunt, Maimuna bint al-Harith. Author's note, that is the wife of the Prophet. While the Prophet was there with her during her night turn, the Prophet offered the Isha prayer in the mosque, returned home, and after having prayed 4 rakat, he slept. Later on, he got up at night and then asked whether the boy, he used a similar word, had slept. Then he got up for the prayer, and I stood up by his left side, but he made me stand to his right and offered 5 rakat, followed by 2 more rakat. Then he slept, and I heard him snoring, and then, after a while, he left for the Fajr prayer. Chapter 119, narrated by Abu Huraira. People say that I have narrated many hadiths. Had it not been for 2 verses in the Quran, I would not have narrated a single hadith. And the verses are, "Verily, those who conceal the clear sign and the guidance which we have been sent down, and no doubt our muhajir, and no doubt our emigrant brothers used to be busy in the market with their business, and our Ansari brothers used to be busy with their agriculture. But I, Abu Huraira, used to stick to Allah's apostles contented with what will fill my stomach, and I used to attend that which they used to not attend, and I used to memorize that which they used not to memorize." Chapter 120, narrated by Abu Huraira. I said to Allah's apostle, "I hear many hadiths from you, but I forget them." Allah's apostle said, "Spread your garment." I did accordingly, and he moved his hands as if filling them with something, and emptied them in my garment, and then said, "Take and wrap this sheet over your body." I did it, and after that, I never forgot anything. Chapter 121, narrated by Ibrahim bin al-Mundhir. Ibn Abi Fudik narrated the same as the above, but added that the Prophet had moved his hands as if filling them with something, and then he'd emptied them in the garment of Abu Huraira. Chapter 122, narrated by Abu Huraira. I have memorized 2 kinds of knowledge from Allah's apostle. I have propagated one of them to you, and if I propagated the second, then my throat would be cut. Chapter 123, narrated by Jarir. The Prophet said to me during Hajjat al-Wida, "Let the people keep quiet and listen." Then he said, addressing the people, "Do not become infidels. Revert to disbelief after me by striking the necks of one another and killing each other." Chapter 124, narrated by Sayyid bin Jubair. I said to Ibn Abbas, "Naf al-Bakali claims that Moses, the companion of Khadir, was not the Moses of Bani Israel, but he was another Moses." Ibn Abbas remarked that the enemy of Allah was a liar. Ibn Abbas remarked that the enemy of Allah, in this case, Nauf, was a liar. Chapter 125, narrated by Ubay bin Kaab. The Prophet said, "Once the Prophet Moses stood up and addressed Bani Israel. He was asked, 'Who is the most learned man amongst the people?' The Prophet said, 'I am the most learned.' Allah admonished Moses, as he did not attribute absolute knowledge to him. So Allah inspired to Moses, 'At the junction of the 2 seas, there is a slave amongst my slaves who is more learned than you.' Moses said, 'O my Lord, how can I meet him?' Allah said, 'Take a fish in a large basket and proceed, and you will find him at the place where you will lose the fish.' So Moses set out along with his servant boy, Yusha bin Nuin, and carried a fish in a large basket till they reached a rock, where they laid their heads down and slept. The fish came out of the basket, and it took its way into the sea as in a tunnel. So it was an amazing thing for both Moses and his servant boy. They proceeded for the rest of the night and that following day. When the day broke, Moses said to his servant boy, 'Bring us our early meal. No doubt we have suffered much fatigue in this journey.' Moses did not get tired till he passed the place about which he was told. There, the servant boy told Moses, "Do you remember when we betook ourselves to the rock? I indeed forgot the fish." Moses remarked, "That is what we have been seeking." So they went back, retracing their footsteps, till they reached the rock. There they saw a man covered with a garment. Moses greeted him. Al-Qadir replied, saying, "How do people greet each other in your land?" Moses said, "I am Moses." He asked, "The Moses of Bani Israel?" Moses replied in the affirmative and added, "May I follow you, so that you teach me of that knowledge which you have been taught?" Al-Qadir replied, "Verily, you will not be able to remain patient with me, O Moses. I have some of the knowledge of Allah, which he has taught me, and which you do not know. While you have some of the knowledge which Allah has taught you, which I do not know." Moses said, "Allah willing, you will find me patient, and I will not disobey you in aught." So both of them set out walking along the seashore, as they did not have a boat. In the meantime, a boat passed by them, and they requested the crew of the boat to take them on board. The crew recognized Al-Qadir and took them on board without fare. Then a sparrow came and stood on the edge of the boat and dipped its beak once or twice in the sea. Al-Qadir said, "O Moses, my knowledge and your knowledge have not decreased Allah's knowledge, except as much as the sparrow has decreased the water of the sea with its beak." Al-Qadir went to one of the planks of the boat and plucked it out. Moses said, "These people give us a free lift, but you have broken their boat and scuttled it so it has drowned its people." Al-Qadir replied, "Didn't I tell you that you will not be able to remain patient with me?" Moses said, "Call me not to account for what I forgot." The first excuse of Moses was that he had forgotten. Then they proceeded further and found a boy playing with other boys. Al-Qadir took one of the boy's heads from the top and plucked it out with his hands. Moses said, "Have you killed an innocent soul who has killed none?" Al-Qadir replied, "Did I not tell you that you cannot remain patient with me?" Then they both proceeded till when they came to the people of a town. They asked them for food, but they refused to entertain them. Then they found there a wall on the point of collapsing. Abu Qadir repaired it with his own hands. Moses said, "If you had wished, surely you could have taken wages for it." Al-Qadir replied, "This is the parting between you and me." The Prophet added, "May Allah be merciful to Moses. Would that he could have been more patient to learn more about his story with Al-Qadir." Chapter 126, narrated by Abu Musa. A man came to the Prophet and asked, "O Allah's Apostle, what kind of fighting is in Allah's cause? I ask this, for some of us fight of being enraged and angry, and some for the sake of his pride and haughtiness." The Prophet raised his head, and he said, "He who fights so that Allah's word should be superior, then he fights in Allah's cause." Chapter 127, narrated by Abdullah bin Amr. I saw the Prophet near the Jamra, and the people were asking him questions about religious problems. A man asked, "O Allah's Apostle, I have slaughtered the animal before doing the Rami." The Prophet replied, "Do the Rami now, and there is no harm." Another person asked, "O Allah's Apostle, I got my head shaved before slaughtering the animal." The Prophet replied, "Do the slaughtering now, and there is no harm." So on that day, when the Prophet was asked about anything as regarding the ceremony of Hajj performed before or after its due time, his reply was, "Do it now, and there is no harm." Chapter 128, narrated by Abdullah. While I was going with the Prophet through the ruins of Medina, and he was reclining on a date palm leaf stalk, some Jews passed by. Some of them said to the others, "Ask the Prophet about the spirit." Some of them said that they should not ask him that question, as he might give a reply which would displease them. But some of them insisted on asking, and so one of them stood up and asked, "O Abu al-Qasim, what is the spirit?" The Prophet remained quiet. I thought he was being inspired divinely, so I stayed till that state of the Prophet while being inspired was over. The Prophet then said, "And they ask you, O Muhammad, concerning the spirit, say, the spirit, its knowledge is with my Lord, and of knowledge you, mankind, have been given only a little." Chapter 129, narrated by Azwad. Ibn Az-Zubair said to me, "Aisha used to tell you secretly a number of things. What did she tell you about the Kaaba?" I replied, "She told me that once the Prophet said, O Aisha, had not your people been still close to the pre-Islamic period of infidelity, I would have dismantled the Kaaba and would have made two doors in it, one for the entrance and the other for the exit. Later on, Ibn al-Zubayr did the same. Chapter 130, narrated by Anas bin Malik. Once Mu'ad was along with Allah's Apostle as a companion rider. Allah's Apostle said, O Mu'ad bin Jabal. Mu'ad replied, Labaik and Sadaik, O Allah's Apostle. Again the Prophet said, O Mu'ad. Mu'ad said thrice, Labaik and Sadaik, O Allah's Apostle. Allah's Apostle said, There is none who testifies sincerely that none has the right to be worshipped but Allah, and Muhammad is his apostle, except that Allah will save him from the hellfire. Mu'ad said, O Allah's Apostle, should I not inform the people about it so they may have glad tidings? He replied, When the people hear about it, they will solely depend upon it. Then Mu'ad narrated the above-mentioned hadith just before his death, being afraid of committing sin by not telling the knowledge. Chapter 131, narrated by Anas. I was informed that the Prophet had said to Mu'ad, Whosoever will meet Allah without associating anything in worship with him will go to paradise. Mu'ad asked the Prophet, Should I not inform the people of this good news? The Prophet replied, No, I am afraid, lest they should depend upon it absolutely. Chapter 132, narrated by Salama. Sulaim came to Allah's Apostle and said, Verily, Allah is not shy of telling you the truth. Is it necessary for a woman to take a bath after she has a wet dream? The Prophet replied, Yes, if she notices a discharge. Salama covered her face and asked, O Allah's Apostle, does a woman get a discharge? He replied, Yes. Let your right hand be in dust. Author's note, let your right hand be in dust is an Arabic expression you say to a person when you contradict his statement, meaning you will not achieve goodness. And that is why the son resembles his mother. Chapter 133, narrated by Abdullah bin Umar. Allah's Apostle said, Amongst the trees there is a tree, the leaves of which do not fall, and it is like a Muslim. Tell me the name of that tree. Everybody started thinking about the trees of the desert areas, and I thought of the date palm tree, but felt shy to answer. The others asked, O Allah's Apostle, inform us of it. He replied, It is the date palm tree. I told my father what had come to my mind, and on that he said, Had you said it, I would have preferred it to such and such a thing that I might possess. Chapter 134, narrated by Ali. I used to get the emotional urethral discharge frequently, so I requested Al-Miqdad to ask the Prophet about it. Al-Miqdad asked him, and he replied, One has to perform ablution after it. Chapter 135, narrated by Nafi. Abdullah bin Umar said, A man got up in the mosque and said, O Allah's Apostle, at which place you order us that we shall assume the ihram? Allah's Apostle replied, The residents of Medina should assure the ihram from Dil Hulayfa, the people of Syria from Al-Jufa, and the people of Najd from Karn. Ibn Umar further said, The people consider that Allah's Apostle had also said, The residents of Yemen should assume ihram from Yalamam. Ibn Umar used to say, I do not remember whether Allah's Apostle had said the last statement or not. Chapter 136, narrated by Ibn Umar. A man asked the Prophet, What kinds of clothes should a Muhrim, also known as a Muslim intent to perform an Umrah or Hajj, wear? He replied, He should not wear a skirt, a turban, trousers, a head cloak or garment scented with saffron or kinds of perfumes, and if he has slippers, then he can use kufs. And if he has no slippers, then he can use leather socks. But the socks should be cut short as to make the ankles bare.